National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This weekend, the Universal Church is celebrating the canonizations of two extraordinary young men, Carlo Acutis and Pier Giorgio Frassati. This week on Register Radio, we're joined by Register contributor Sabrina Farisi, who had a chance to interview Carlo Acutis' remarkable mother. And then, as AI, artificial intelligence, continues to grow in influence and usage, colleges and universities are confronting tough questions about the use of AI tools in academia. We talked to Register staff writer Jonah McCowan about what lies ahead for students and professors in the halls, both real and virtual, of higher learning. Hello. Welcome to Register Radio. I'm Matthew Bunsen. EWTN News' Vice President and Editorial Director, joined in studio, as always, by Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. Shannon, how are you?
Very well, Matthew.
As an aside, you and I were able to attend both the Catholic Radio Conference this last week. We had Teresa Tomeo as a guest last week, and the family celebration. Real quick, how was that experience for you?
It was, these were incredible people, really salt-of-the-earth people who have responded to God's call, who were in different fields other than radio, and felt compelled to get involved in Catholic radio, which is so important. That was my first takeaway. Second was your excellent keynote address, which I'm happy to say we're publishing.
Thank you very much for that.
NCRegister.com. connecting Catholic radio to the popes and Pope Leo most recently. So it was a great experience.
Good. Yeah, I'm happy to hear that. Well, and of course, now we're on to even bigger events, so to speak, with the canonizations this weekend of Blessed Carlo Acutis and Pier Giorgio Frassati. Two saints. Frassati died in 1925 at the age of 24 from polio. Carlo Acutis in 2006 from leukemia at the age of 15. Remarkable young men, and I want to introduce this discussion with a quick quote from a great piece from Sabrina Farisi. Both Carlo and Pier Giorgio Frassati shared a love for the Eucharist, a love for the poor, and a love for the Virgin Mary. These two are models that we need in this particular moment for the young people of today. That's from Antonio Salzano Acutis, the mother of Carlo Acutis, who has been this faithful, gifted spokesperson for the cause of Carlo Acutis, but also what made him a saint. She was, after all, right there as a witness. And Sabrina Farisi was able to do an extensive interview with her, both about Carlo Acutis and Pier Giorgio Frassati. Sabrina, welcome to Register Radio.
Well, it's good to be here, as always.
So you were able to sit down. What were the circumstances of your interview with Carlo's mother?
So I've interviewed Antonia at this point about six or seven times, and we were able to speak on the phone. We just wanted to catch up again and talk about the upcoming canonization. As you know, Carlo was supposed to be canonized in April, a week after Easter, and that was canceled because Pope Francis passed away. So in a turn of events, which we all know, there was a new date, and that is coming up next week. So I wanted to ask Antonio, how has this been for you? What is this going to feel like, finally coming to the end of this journey? So it was wonderful to speak to her, as always. She's a wonderful person to talk to.
Yeah, Sabrina, as you mentioned, this is you've done a half dozen or more of these interviews. They are really gems, and I wanted to read a couple of quick excerpts from them. Because I don't know if it's just me, probably not, but I derive so much spiritual benefit from listening to Antonio. Here's her talking about, you asked her about technology and how it's distracting to so many young people, all of us really. And she said, Carlo used to say that time cannot be wasted on the things that God does not want. You've also talked to her about parenting and advice for parents. She is, after all, the parent of a soon-to-be saint. This is just amazing. What is the role of parents and mentors of young people, you asked? She said, young people are like a Stradivarius violin. A violin must be played by someone who knows how to play. If you don't know how to play it, the sounds are strident. we adults have the task of making music with these Stradivariuses that we have because they are creatures of God made in his image, special, unique, and unrepeatable. And finally, in this recent piece that you wrote, there were so many gems in there, but she talked about the spiritual battle. And she said, heroic virtue is the stable attitude of the will towards the good. This means not committing venial sins voluntarily. The world is full of mediocre Christians, that got my attention, who are not engaging in a good spiritual battle. As Carlo used to say, what is the point in winning a million battles if you can't win in the battle against yourself and your own corrupt passions? Sabrina, you've talked to her over several years now. Do you see a deepening of her spiritual wisdom, or was she like this from the beginning of your relationship with her?
Well, no, Antonia's amazing. And I have to say she's a very humble person. Because one of the things she always says is that she was not a practicing Catholic when she got married and had Carlo. And it wasn't until he started asking all these questions about the faith that she realized she really didn't know anything about Catholicism. So because of Carlo, she went back and started to study her faith, and she would end up studying 12 years of theology at night because she runs a publishing business, a family publishing house. So she's a busy modern woman, but she has definitely grown in her faith. And when she speaks about Carlo, you know, she's not just giving his biography, which she does, but she's also teaching us about the Catholic faith. So I would have to say yes. I mean, there's definitely been a deepening of her faith. And when she's talking to crowds, I mean, she's able to fill up cathedrals. She spoke in St. Patrick's Cathedral, and it was at capacity. She's giving us these really deep theological lessons. And every time I speak to her, you're right, she just has these incredible quotes where, you know, it just makes me stop and think. I mean, she said the world is full of mediocre Christians who are not engaging in a good spiritual battle. And she's right. I mean, we all know people who go to Mass every Sunday, but they're really not trying hard enough. They're not, you know, and we have to ask ourselves, are we those mediocre Christians? So, she's an incredibly wise person, and we're really lucky to have her because she's bringing us the wisdom from Carlo's life, and it's become her apostolate. She goes around the world, really, and she's teaching us a lot about what it means to be Catholic today in the modern age.
It's striking that the two canonizations were, I think, initially supposed to be done on separate days. And here, because of events that transpired with the passing of Pope Francis, the election of Pope Leo, now they are together. And to have her then reflect on the two of them, she seems very conversant, of course, with Carlo, but she's also quite familiar with Pier Giorgio Frassati. In fact, she talks about, she quotes him in Italian, dobbiamo vivere non vivacchiare. So it just, we need to live and not just scrape by. And you were just talking about mediocre Christians.
Yeah. So there's a lot of similarities between Pier Giorgio and Carlo. And by the way, Carlo was a big admirer of Pier Giorgio Frassati, and before he died, it seems that he was putting together some information, and he was thinking about maybe making an exhibit on young saints. So I find that really fascinating. Pier Giorgio was someone like Carlo who he was living life to the full. He wasn't just a shrinking violet in the corner. He was out there with a lot of friends. Doing apostolate, feeding the poor, climbing mountains, and, bringing this love of life to others. And Carlo was very much the same. Carlo had a lot of friends. He was a very, popular kid in his high school. Everyone loved him, and he was known as the computer wizard in the school. So they were very much young men of their time. And the fact that they're being canonized together, I mean, honestly, they're both such amazing saints. They deserve to have their own canonization day by themselves. But God has a plan, and I think it's going to really shine a light on what young people can do with their faith I think it's going to be a marvelous experience. And God willing, it will influence a lot of young people to really come back to the faith and live their faith to the full.
Yeah, it's quite a 1-2 punch, you know, for to have them together. Sabrina, you've written a book about Carlo. What does the canonization this weekend mean to you, and how will you watch it? Will you have a watch party or something?
Yes, that's what I think I'm going to do. So
up at 3 a.m.?
Well, so I don't know if I'm going to get up at 3 a.m., to tell you the truth. I think I'll watch it later on on EWTN, but I do plan to have a watch party with my family and friends. But for those of us who've really been interested in this story, we've known for a long time that this is a great saint. So this is the culmination of a long journey, I would have to say. It means a lot to me. I'm very, very happy that the world is going to get to know Carlo. And, you know, one thing I'm sure you guys have been seeing is that the story of Carlo, it's been in the secular press. I mean, it's not just the Catholic press that writes about him, but, you know, it's CNN, the New York Times, all the major networks are probably going to be writing about it again. And I haven't seen this with that many other saints. So it's a very beautiful moment when the Catholic Church seems to be discovered by the secular press.
Yeah, it really is, and they'll be paying attention and getting introduced also to Pierre Frassati, who's been a little bit eclipsed, you know, by Carlo. But I think it's been nice to see how interest in his story has also resurfaced and is surging now too. So,
he's a wonderful saint. I've been a fan of his for years. So I'm very happy about this.
One last point I think that's really worth making is that in your conversation with this remarkable Antonia, she talks about the fact that Pier Giorgio had defects, Carlo had some defects. I love the fact that the worst thing she could say about her son was that he liked Coca-Cola and Nutella. I think many of us would be happy with those as terrible flaws. But they are so real. They are so relevant to our daily lives, aren't they?
Yeah. Other things I discovered about Carlo in my research is that he was a kid who liked to speak a lot. And he was probably one of those kids that in class, he knew the answers and would raise his hand a lot and speak. And at a certain point, he realized, you know, maybe I'm talking too much. And so he started to force himself to speak a little bit less, which is very... I mean, it's just so sweet and so self-aware of him. But yeah, and he didn't like to buy a lot of clothes. He didn't like to own more shoes or clothes. I think that's the only time he ever had a fight with his mom. He didn't want her to buy him too much clothes. So there were some arguments about that at home.
Understood. Well, Sabrina, thank you so much for this, for your work on Carlo Acutis, now your work also on Pier Giorgio Frassati. Your piece can be found at ncregister.com at Carlo Acutis' Mother, First Millennial Saint, shows holiness is in the ordinary.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation, in this case, with Jonah McCowan and the impact of artificial intelligence on colleges and universities. Stay tuned to Register Radio here on EWTN Radio.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back to Register Radio. I'm Matthew Bunsen, along with my co-host, as always, Shannon Mullen, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register. AI, artificial intelligence, does seem to be everywhere these days. It is impacting increasingly almost everything we do, and that includes colleges and universities. And they are confronting a lot of tough questions about the use of AI and how Catholic educators and students should respond. Well, Jonah McCowan, who is something of a growing expert for us on AI, has written a piece on this very topic. And Shannon, I know that this is part also of our ongoing college guide.
Yes, Jonah's story, which is available at ncregister.com, is also one of the anchor stories for our September 21st print issue, which includes our 16-page annual Catholic Identity College Guide. And this features a breakdown of about more than 50 schools across the country and some outside the United States that have really doubled down on their Catholic identity, their Catholic teaching, and it's really one of our most popular issues of the year.
Well, Jonah, what was the biggest surprise in putting this piece together in terms of how Catholic educators and students are responding?
Well, Matthew, I'd say the biggest surprise for me is actually that many professors and instructors at Catholic universities are actually using AI themselves. which sounds kind of funny because one might assume that, you know, students at many Catholic universities are forbidden from using AI, and that's somewhat true to an extent. But it really does vary depending on the discipline that the students are in. Like, for example, I spoke to an accounting major at Benedictine College in Kansas, and he was saying that they're actually encouraged to use AI in their classes, you know, to perform calculations and look up tax law and things like that. But of course, they always have to double check it. They always have to double check what the AI says. But of course, in other disciplines like philosophy and theology, it's pretty much banned in most areas of the classroom, because there's really a big temptation there for students to let ChatGPT write their articles for them. And obviously many professors are having to wrestle with that.
Jonah, you note in your story that ChatGPT debuted at the end of 2022. So it's not brand new, but I would say just in the past 3 months, probably 3 or 4 months, AI and the issue in terms of education has really exploded. Your piece begins with this viral moment of a UCLA student at their graduation last May appearing on a Jumbotron, holding up a laptop with ChatGPT pulled up, thanking ChatGPT for helping him on his final exams. That enraged a lot of people.
Yes.
But
it's a little brazen, doesn't it? That's
risky.
Yeah, it's a little on the nose.
Yes. I wouldn't have taken that chance. But anyway, this is exploding as an issue for colleges on many levels, right?
Yes, that's right. And I would say especially at, you know, public university state schools, you know, surveys have been done suggesting that something like 80% of students have used AI to help them with their assignments. Now, that doesn't mean that all of them are cheating necessarily. You know, AI and ChatGPT can be used as a very effective search engine, for example, again, as long as you double check what it tells you. And so it is very widespread, this use of AI. Again, it's not necessarily the case that every student is using it to cheat. If they're using it to kind of augment what they're doing, then that can be acceptable, depending on the institution and the professor. I want to be careful there. I don't want to suggest that it's okay for ChatGPT to do your assignments, but it can be a useful tool as long as the student has kind of a foundational understanding of what's going on in the class, and obviously as long as they adhere to their professor's rules.
You know, one thing that is striking in your reporting here is that, as you say, more than 80% of students are using AI tools regularly, but it's a little hazy as to what they're using them for. And as you also note, there seems to be a very wide variety of approaches to AI. Do you anticipate that there will be a growing consensus on what to do with AI, or is this going to be something increasingly of a free-for-all with each university establishing for itself its approach?
That's a good question. I do think it'll probably vary depending on the university and, again, depending on the department and the discipline within each university. So, for example, I spoke to a couple of professors at Thomas Aquinas College, which has campuses in California and New England, and their whole approach is it's a liberal arts education that's very much an integrated curriculum, no electives, and their whole pedagogy is based on small Socratic seminars, so it's very much class-based discussion. It's very hard to cheat with AI in that kind of a setting. So that's just an example of how, one Catholic university is approaching this. They've been doing that curriculum for quite a number of years, so it's not necessarily a response to AI. But I do think it's possible that many institutions will try to go to more of a model like this. If it's an institution that has been doing a lot of take-home exams and essay-based assignments that are relatively easy to cheat on using AI, they are almost certainly already reassessing their approach and may try to copy what some of these Catholic colleges like Thomas Aquinas, like Benedictine College, are doing and have been doing for a while.
Speaking of copying, Jonah, there's an interesting section of your story which really talks about the benefits, educational benefits, of doing a term paper. It never really occurred to me at the time that there was a benefit to that, but you talk right about how there's just these critical thinking skills that go into writing a paper, coming up with an original thought or a thesis statement, that kind of thing. For those in our audience who are not really well acquainted with these tools, how easy is it to do a term paper using AI?
That's a good question. In a certain sense, it is extremely easy, almost sinfully easy. You can go to ChatGPT and you can ask it a very specific prompt. You can ask it to write in a certain style. It will produce something for sure. AI is famously very very good at giving you an answer, whether it's the correct answer or not.
Can it write
you something?
Can it write a 10-page paper the night before it's due?
I have never tried that myself, but I think it's probably
we're happy
possible
to hear that. Yes.
Yeah, I think it's probably possible. Thankfully, I'm several years out of college, so I never had to deal with any of this. But it's possible to generate papers like that. The thing is, they're not very good, and they're actually pretty easy to spot once you know kind of the typical features of an AI article. Or an AI paper, excuse me. A lot of them kind of have this very, very kind of fluffy style where they're saying a lot of words, but they're not really saying much. And so this kind of goes to a point I make in the article, which is that many professors nowadays are kind of becoming more savvy to how these tools operate because they're using them themselves. They're using them to help them draft things or proofread things, and that's generally perfectly fine and not necessarily ethically suspect. But I think it's a good thing for professors to understand what an AI generated term paper looks like so that they can spot it, because there are tools that basically use AI to catch AI, but they're not always accurate, and sometimes just a human's gut feeling is the best thing to go off of.
Well, and to that point, I mean, I know that there are programs such as CopyLeaks AI and other forms of plagiarism detection software that can be built into learning management systems. The classic being Canvas. It's used by a lot of universities who do virtual campuses. The question is how reliable those are, and also what the individual professor thinks is acceptable in terms of the use of AI. So this is something that is going to be ongoing, though, isn't it?
Yes, it's a very interesting arms race, because on the one hand, you have the generative AI companies such as ChatGPT that are continually improving their models and making them smarter. And then, like you said, there are these companies that are designed to catch AI and detect when something is AI generated, and then they are also continually improving. And
I like your use of the terms. Yeah, I like your term of the use, arms race. Jonah, I look forward to further reporting on this.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well.
All right, well, that's it for Register Radio this week. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks so much for joining us here on EWTN. Until next week, on behalf of our producer, Michael McCall, and Shannon Mullen, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Please take care, and God bless.